KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Hi there. The 4 o'clock hour has arrived. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sports Talk. I'm Barbara Walters, and this is 2020.
Tannenism.
So the Dukes are back home this week, the men. Five of their last seven at Matty Knight Arena. Starts with the Coloridians. Thursday, 6 o'clock. Then a Sunday, 6 o'clock game. Kind of an odd starting time. But, you know, you get into this time of year when college basketball kind of rules. And in a stunning development in sports, TV makes a lot of decisions. Well, I know you didn't see that one coming. But c'est vrai. It's true. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So, at the arena last night, as the Oregon women paid back with interest Arizona State for having the audacity to beat them down in Tempe, and it got to be, blowout city. And I'm thinking, so first of all, it's sold out. And you're just looking around the arena. And from a two-year-old to somebody, I was definitely older than me, so 60-year-old, the 20 jerseys. And
are you sure they were older than you?
100%.
They'd have to be really old.
There was a man and a woman who I saw, both were wearing the 20s. And they were definitely a 60-something. And I'm thinking, for a fan base, winning is great. And, you know, your favorite teams. How about this? How much different is this list? And fill in the blank. There's no wrong answer. Let's, for hypothetical sake, since we do a show in Eugene, let's say, is your favorite Oregon men's basketball team ever the best one? Is it 2017, the Final Four team? Is your favorite Oregon football team ever 2010 or 2014? As opposed to the best one. For the Oregon women, is last year your favorite team ever? I just think, and being able to kind of tap into a pool of history where I saw a city the size of New York just embrace certain teams. Personally, and I threw this out on Twitter, if I gave you my four favorite Oregon football teams, first of all, you've got to make a connection. Second of all, for example, why I insist the greatest Yankee team I've ever seen was 1998. They're not on my favorites list because I lived here and I only saw them play three times. But For football, 95, 98, 2001, 2010 would be my faves. Because, from 95 through 2015, I went to every single solitary home game. And, for my favorite Yankee team, 77, Reggie's first year. And yes, there's going to be some overlap where, oh, by the way, so you really love the team that won the championship. Yep. Absolutely. For Thanksgiving that year, Uncle George got us Reggie. They had won the pennant the year before, got swept by the stinking Reds, and they had a missing piece, and it was Mr. October. I mean, we'll go through hockey, we'll go through that, and I just feel like, and obviously Sabrina has something to do it, Coach has something to do it, Satu, the way these young women carry themselves, and obviously people pushing through the turnstile in historic fashion like we've never seen. I mean, remember, going back to the Kamikaze Kids, going back to the Great Ernie Ken teams, you got less than 10,000 because the arena wasn't that big. Now it's nobody's drawing 12,000 fans like the Oregon women's team this year. So I just think that they have a place in the sports heart of this community like very few others. You guys make that determination. I mean, it's hard to compare to football because the magnitude. You know, you get your 6 or 7 home games. There's a passion that certain college towns have for football that it's kind of transcendent. And like I said, it's great to get 12,000. You know, we saw during the Kelly era and into health. And now, once again, under Cristobal, you know, 58,000 people. It's a lot for a town this size. So thoughts on all that. We'll talk about odd lawsuits by bad former Major League pitchers. We'll talk Barry Booker. We'll talk NBA and awful calls from the Stifle Tower, Rudy Gobert, that cost the Blazers a chance at a tie and at least OT. Some other MLB thoughts. We've got Bobby Knight returning to Bloomington. And your calls, always welcome, 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in another Nick. Hey, Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you?
All right, what's up?
Well, I want to first say congrats to Ducks women this weekend and Ducks hockey, who took the Pac-8, beat Boise State for the big title, big cup. And but more importantly, Steve, I want to talk about what should be one more of your favorite football teams, and that's the undefeated New York Guardians, led by Matt McGloin.
Who? The idiot who used to quarterback Penn State?
Matt McGloin. Now, see, now I know you're just trolling, because he's even won games for the Raiders before. I know you've heard of him. Just look back. But, hey, take your bias away for a second and realize to yourself for a moment, the best football that's been played in MetLife Stadium in years happened this weekend, and you missed out on it.
So wait, was Matt McGloin the Penn State quarterback?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, that's the last time he mattered.
Well, I mean, he did win games for the Raiders, so you're not wrong. But, again, the best football I've seen, the best quarterback play I've seen in MetLife Stadium
wow.
since I think they put it up.
Wow. So winning a Super Bowl doesn't count?
I didn't play the Well, you know, whatever they call this XFL Bowl, if it's not the $1 million game, once the Guardians take that, I think, you know, that might be up there with the great New York wins over, you know, the New England team.
You know, I know you're I know you have a full-time job. I'm hoping that you have health care coverage and that maybe you can go see somebody, Nick.
Well, here's the thing, Steve. If I heard correctly, all we need to do to get you on the XFL bandwagon is get you free tickets. So when can we get you up to Seattle? Can you come this weekend? I know Jerry Glanville's defense is coming up from Tampa Bay, and Seattle's going to light them up.
No, I said in 1983 or 4, the only reason I went to see the old USFL is because I got free tickets. And it was 12 minutes from my home, and I didn't have to drive, and the beer was free. So it ain't happening.
We can make 2 out of those 3 things happen, Steve, if you're willing to negotiate.
I'm, by the way, not willing to negotiate.
Well, I tried, man. But hey, you still got to catch a little bit of it, even if it's just the highlights. Just so when you're making fun of it, you have context.
Since when do I need context to make fun of something I don't like?
Oh, you need to see this new kick return, because the first couple times you see it, you don't know if you're looking at football, field hockey. It's very confusing.
It's not going to be that confusing to me, because I'll be watching basketball.
I'm telling you, just check it out, because I honestly think a couple of these things they're going to consider adopting. One of them they won't is extra points being 1, 2, or 3 points, because that was a miserable fail for sure.
All right, number 61. You've made your point, and I hope you're happy. Two Knicks teaming up against me.
I'll take that win.
All right.
Have a good one, Steve.
Have a good one. Nick Cody, number 61 in your program, number one in your heart, pride of Brush Prairie, Washington.
He's really pushing that number one in your heart for you, isn't he? I feel like he came strong with the XFL. He just offered free tickets and maybe free beer to go watch some XFL. You get to hang out with Nick Cody, talk football, really learn from an offensive lineman.
A 10-hour round trip to watch that. I'm telling you, if you told me I could be teleported to my seat, I'd be like, no, it's not going to work. I have no desire. I have less than no desire. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
I think you should hate watch like a couple series.
It's not going to happen.
You just hate watch it.
I won't.
Just
I don't waste my
it.
Time. I mean, I waste my time on things that I don't consider wasting time. That's a waste of time. By the way, on a more serious note, Oregon's cornerback coach, Dante Williams, looks like he's headed to USC, according to 24/7 Sports. So, yeah, that's the first loss, which means any of you are good with cover guys? Send your resume. Attention, Coach Cristobal, Hatfield Dallin, or whatever they work, the Casanova Center.
HDC would be.
Leo Harris Parkway. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
More importantly, if you have a lot of success playing NCAA football and you're really good at the recruiting portion of that game, you should definitely send in your resume to Oregon football. Because Tyson Alger wrote an article in The Athletic about Dante Williams and how important he was to Oregon landing some of their best commits, including Dante Manning, who was recently up to a 5-star, Justin Flo as well. So a lot of these guys that have been plucked out of Southern California right out of USC's backyard that chose to come to Oregon, Dante Williams is a large part of that. So Cristobal is a big recruiter. He has been able to find really good recruiters. you got to go back. I mean, finding a specialist position like corners and recruiting kind of thing, not as important as picking an offensive and a defensive coordinator the last two off seasons, but it's certainly going to be a big shoes to fill for
big
Williams.
Shoes. Huge. Yeah. Huge.
Medium, Phil.
Mediums? All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, on ESPN2 right now, you've got another top five battle. Hard to believe it was a week ago that Oregon played UConn. Feels like longer ago because a lot happened. Well, South Carolina, who has just the one loss and they're number one in the country, is hosting UConn. They're playing down there in SEC country. And a lot of people think, and when I talk about Michelle Vopel, who was on our show last week and also is at the game tonight, and some of the ESPN pundits think that when the best foot is put forward, it's probably South Carolina and Oregon. They are unbeaten in conference. Their one loss was to Indiana, who remains a top 20 team. They went into Maryland when the Terps were highly ranked, and they beat them by double digits. Remember, Baylor's number two. South Carolina handled them by 15. They beat Kentucky by 27 when the Cats were ranked in the top 15. They just had their one real challenge in a long, long while at Mississippi State, who's a very good team, beat them by two. So this is pretty interesting. If you haven't seen South Carolina and you want to be greedy and start thinking about, down the road, and again, as fans and analysts, we could look ahead. I know players and coaches don't generally partake in that practice, but this South Carolina team, they're good. They're the real deal. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So I wanted to get to playoff expansion. And if you didn't hear about that crazy story about Mike Bolsinger, the former major league pitcher who was in L.A. today, filed a civil lawsuit in Los Angeles Superior Court accusing the Houston Astros, the cheaters, of unfair business practices, negligence, intentional interference with contractual and economic relations. His last game was during the infamous 2017 season in August. But unfortunately for him, he pitched like crap the first 3 years of his career. And he had 1 year where he had an ERA under four, otherwise fives and sixes and sevens. And he's going after the Astros. And people are like looking at it with a skeptical eye, but kind of like, as crazy as this sounds, if you make the Astros aggravated, bitter, and miserable, good on you, dude. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Ed. Ed, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going fine. I wanted to follow up on the women's basketball comments. Two things. One is part of the reason I think the Oregon women's team is in such demand is because Sabrina is truly a once-in-a-generational player.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's all of us are sort of saying we've got to get a chance to see her, and that's why, you know, some of us drive from Corvallis down to see her, so it's sort of good. But the other thing, you made a comment about South Carolina and the big win over Baylor. Lauren Cox was not playing that game.
Oh, right. Yeah, you know, I brought that up a couple of weeks ago.
It's a pretty big deal because I'd say Baylor, you got to put in the same group when you have Lauren Cox because, you know, they didn't. I saw the game. I've seen them a few times. I saw them against Kansas State, and they weren't in their shot, but they still won by 14. They're pretty much beating everybody, and they beat UConn real handily too. So I wouldn't keep them out when you're talking about them.
Nah, that's a good point. I appreciate that, Ed. Driving down from Corvallis to see Sabrina, not the XFL.
Man, I would if there was an XFL team in Portland or Eugene, I would go to a game. I would have to check that out. I got to see what it's like because on TV product is interesting. That you're getting a lot more information from the actual coaches and the players that are on the field than you do in an NFL game where it's pretty much restricted to a coach giving you a cliche before or after halftime and then an analyst trying to guess what play is going to come. In the XFL, you're hearing the play call and the analyst, being the football player, knows what play is going to come and then says, hey, watch for this receiver in the slot. Watch the offensive lineman. They're going to get into a run block to the left. It's going to be a zone read. I'm actually learning about football after finally watching it for years. Which maybe speaks more to me.
If somebody said, here are your options, you could attend an XFL game or be used as military target practice, I would pick B.
Really? Oh, live rounds or just blanks?
Whatever. Oh. I'm not even providing a qualifier. That's how little interest I have in it. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, we're seeing this again. UConn is taking on South Carolina, and the Huskies have 2 points. There's 20 seconds to go in the first quarter. I thought what we saw yesterday was like, well, that can't happen very often. And then it happens the next day? This is kooky talk. I'll tell you what, we saw some really shaky offense if you followed Oregon basketball this weekend. I mean, the Civil War in Corvallis. I mean, it was 32-28 at halftime. Oregon, oh yeah, that's right, they hit that late three. I mentioned earlier that they only scored 18 points in the second half. Sorry, they missed them. They hit a meaningless three late in the game and ended up losing 63-53. And I'd be curious as to the last time a Dana Altman team scored only 21 points and a half. I mean, in the second half, Oregon shot 30%. Oh, 7 of 23 from downtown. In the second half, they shot 18% from three-point land. 9 of 29 on twos. They only made 22 baskets for the entire game. By the way, they only went to the free throw line four times. And if you read a lot of the write-ups, the problem on the post, I mean, first of all, you've got Okoro, who had to travel because of a family tragedy. I mean, you know, you can't account for that. You just have to feel for the young man. And Folly Dante, he's not playing. I mean, you know, to his credit, Pritchard tried to shoulder maybe a little too much of the burden. I mean, he was 1 of 8 from downtown. He was 7 of 21 overall. You know, Anthony Mathis hit a couple of threes, but then there were a couple of times in that second half where you're just like, just knock one down, anything. And it wasn't like they were getting terrible shots. I just felt like there were too many times where they allowed the shot clock to run. At a certain point, it's like, okay, if you're struggling to get the ball inside and get quality shots, and then if you keep having to lean on long shots, do you maybe tweak your offense just a little itty bit and say, look, if you get a clean look, you got to take it? Because it was kind of almost like a force field. It's like they just couldn't penetrate. And you know, as far as the numbers, I forgot who was calling the game on. Was it Don McLean? I think so. I think it was American Pie. And even though Kyler Kelly only had two blocks, you could see he impacted probably 6 or 7 shots. You know, guys drive in the middle and kind of like, all right, where's 24? Because he's that good of a rim protector. And, yeah, the assist-to-turnover ratio, about 50-50, not very good. And, you know, it's not like Oregon State, especially in that first half, they struggled. They came on, and, well, they actually started getting some easier buckets. I mean, Kelly inside ended up 7 of 9, and, you know, there were a couple of transition baskets. I mean, the Beavs had them 13-4 in second-chance points, points off turnovers 14-6. They outscored Oregon in the paint, and, yeah, it got to a point where it was like, well, they're in it, they're in it. And all of a sudden you looked up and it was like 2 minutes left. And it's like, well, how the hell did they end up down by 8? And then the next thing, it was Catherine bar the door. And that's all she wrote. So as the standings sit today, Colorado, who Oregon plays Thursday, is the boss at 8-3. The Arizona schools and the Ducks are 7-4. And then you have UCLA and USC at 6-5 with Stanford, 5 losses as well. So, you know, between 1 and 7, there's only 2 losses separating them. And this just continues to be kind of an oddball conference. All right, what do you say we take a break? Come back, we'll have an update. Then we'll talk some men's hoops, some women's hoops, and some football with Rob Mosley of GoDucks.com. Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guaranty RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top 5 RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guaranty.com.
Drive Chavez up and in, and a foul on Hanson. Taylor Chavez coming from the left wing. Got a screen, turned the corner. Backs up, 3-ball. Good. Santu 74-43, a 31-point Duck lead. Timeout, Arizona State.
Welcome, 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 Terry Johns. As get a little hoop action there. Satu Sabali with the step back 3. And we also had Taylor Chavez with the hard drive and a foul. So we welcome you back to Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. Did Ovechkin just score? Ovechkin's just Islanders 2, Caps 1 now. Alexander Ovechkin, we actually opened up the top of the show talking about where he stands now in career goals. That would make him 699, looking to become the eighth player ever with 700 lamplighters as we lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, talk some hoops, some football, and we've got the editor-in-chief of GoDucks.com on the line. Follow on Twitter for football. It's at Duck Football. For many other things Oregon sports-related, try at GoDucks Mosley. Rob Mosley joins us. Rob, how's life treating you these days?
It was great until I got on the phone with you and you were talking about Ovechkin. Yeah.
At least we don't hold a grudge. Yeah, it's just, you know, a piece of history, and being really, really old, it's like I've seen every goal from every one of these guys who are on the list now, except for Gordie Howe. I mean, I looked back and it was like, of the top 15 guys I've been alive to see, and you know, as a hockey fan could appreciate, you know, a guy comes up, how good is he going to be? And, you know, somebody like Ovechkin scores 700 goals, and the answer is, I guess, pretty good.
I can't claim to be the most loyal Penguin fan because I do have Ovechkin on a fantasy team, so I'll take the goal tonight.
Nice. All right, one general question, because certain teams just connect with fans more than others, pro and college. I mean, before either of our times, the Kamikaze Kids here, some might favor the 94 football team, the Lukes, Prefontaine. And you've seen a lot of this up close and personal. You hear from the fans, you know the coaches, you know the players. This women's basketball team, are they up there as far as just how they've captured the hearts of Duck fans with, I don't know, fill in the blank, anybody?
Yeah, we talked about this a little earlier, so I put some thought into it. And I don't have a great analogy, honestly. It's relatively unheard of. I think The player who jumps to mind is probably Joey Harrington, in terms of the Sabrina fervor, and just as a guy who, being an in-state guy, and led the Ducks to relatively unprecedented heights with the 9 wins in 99, 10 in 2000, 11 in 2001, and going and winning that Fiesta Bowl, and just the passion and the pride he had for being a Duck as an in-state guy, I think really captured people. And then, honestly, as far as the team goes, what I think of is the softball teams of, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and just the way the community just came out of the woodwork and embraced that team. That was really something special to watch, too. And there's probably some carryover between some of those fans and the fans now that are packed in Matthew Knott Arena. But it occurred to me yesterday during the game when they were playing Shout in the second half. It's the best party in Eugene. Every time out now, sellout two of the last three games. There's another one, senior weekend. I assume both games that weekend will sell out, given who the seniors that will be honored. So it's awesome. It's just it's hard to put into words just how great it is, how much of a spectacle it is, and how awesome it is to see the fans rally behind this team and celebrate them to the extent that they absolutely deserve.
Well, actually, I think you chose very good words. So you should be a writer or a journalist or something eventually.
Yeah, I'll think about it.
I guess I'd be remiss. I mean, if I didn't talk about the Dodgers getting Mookie Betts. I mean, sometimes
just
you make
through.
A move and get you make a move and get a good player, but obviously, we know the drought has extended back to 88. So how you feeling about this move for a team who won 106 games last year?
Yeah, what I'm waiting for now is they win 115 games in the regular season and then still lose in the playoffs. I mean, I honestly wonder if, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here, but I honestly wonder if the David Price pickup will be even more impactful in terms of, having a guy who's proven in the postseason and can go and win in October. I'm interested to see kind of what he ends up being. I mean, Mookie Betts is a great player. I don't see he's like two or three wins better over the course of the season than whoever he'll be replacing. But we're really worried about, if, as a Dodger fan, is that one or two key wins in October.
And sure.
Putting that on a hitter is a crapshoot, but a pitcher can make a difference. And I'm really interested to see, you know, I know Price had an injury issue and had a surgery and got that cleaned up. I'm really interested to see what he brings to the rotation.
Yeah, they're healthy. Kershaw, Buehler, and he. That's a, not a bad 1-2-3 for a playoff. All right, I guess we should get back to hoops as we continue with Rob Mosley. One of my favorite aspects about this women's team is that after a game like that, you can point out like 11 different things before you even get to Sabrina. And I'm looking at Jazz Shelley. For a freshman, would I be accurate? See, she just, I don't know if it's a demeanor, but she has that kind of, I kind of got this and nothing really phases her look.
Yeah, she, you know, she's an Aussie, so maybe there's like a laid back quality to her. Where she's unfazed, but no, I think between the defensive improvements that have been spurred a lot by Mignon Moore and Taylor Chavez, and then the 3-point shooting just we saw yesterday from Aaron Boley and Jazz Shelley, you know, you're talking about huge game turning developments that they provide. And that's before you even get to the big three of Sabalee and Ionescu and Hebert. So, when you've got that kind of impact, you know, when you're talking 7-8 deep on the roster, I think Lydia Giomi's really come a long way. And you know, she can give, even if it's just 6-8 minutes a night, that she can come in and give Hebert a blow. That's huge for helping keep Ruthie fresh. And so just to see all those role players step up and. Be great team players, embrace those roles and embrace their ability to have impacts in those specific ways. This team is just so dangerous. I mean, particularly on the defensive end, since I think they've gotten you, the coaching staff's really gotten their head wrapped around Mignon Moore and how she fits in with this team and just the pressure they can bring defensively now. It was really ironic going into that Utah-Colorado trip that ended with the UConn game. I was really thinking that maybe one of this team's drawbacks was you weren't sure if you had to pressure a team full court to try to turn them over a few times if you were coming back, for instance, you know, could they do that? And then they've just been dominant in that regard the last couple weeks, just turning people over and turning into transition points. And so much of that is Mignon Moore.
Yeah, speed kills. As far as Satu goes, I mean, we could talk about Sabrina's brilliance. I mean, Heber's just the warrior queen and how deep and unselfish they are. And this might sound a little over the top, but you ever get the feeling the opposition just looks at Sabalee and is like, well, what the heck are we supposed to do about that?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you've seen teams that try to collapse on Sabrina and say, she's not beating us. You saw Arizona State yesterday say, you know, we're not going to let Ruthie Hebert beat us in the pick and roll. But yeah, if you're a coach game planning for Satu, what do you prepare for? Because, you know, her 3-point shot's been a little up and down this year, but any given night she could hit 3 or 4 bombs from long range. But her ability to get to the rim and finish or get to the free throw line, the way she's crashing the boards the last few weeks, and then the way she's also facilitating and distributing the ball, and you can run the offense through her from time to time if the pick and roll's not there. It's every single game you just see her develop more and more and more. She was so raw when she got here, and she's just looking so much like a future star at the pro level. She's going to have a really tough decision to make this offseason, because I mean there's no doubt she can be a really high draft pick if she wants to go, but obviously there's going to be some reasons to think about staying too, so hopefully those are a strong pull as well.
You know, I've got to ask you about stores, because you know, you think of the years you've covered these teams, I mean, be it award ceremonies and venues, and when it comes to the women's game, aside from maybe Thompson Bowling Arena where, you know, Tennessee played, you went to a hallowed hall. What did you take away from your visit, and of course I guess the audacity of the Ducks to just march in and be like, yeah, we kind of own this place.
Yeah, the signage and you know, just all the retired numbers. Well, I guess they only have a couple of retired numbers. They've decided that the bar is set so high that you have to literally get into the Naismith Hall of Fame before they retire your number. So Rebecca Lobo and Ray Allen are the only retired numbers, but they, you know, there's a ton of players whose numbers and jerseys are on the walls, on the rafters, what have you. And the, you know, so looking at all those names, looking at the national championship banners, there's so many accolades that it just covers the walls. It's really, really impressive. They've got a newish basketball office building that's got some kind of museum-type features that are just phenomenal, really cool. You can't go there and not be struck by the history they've had, which, you know, if you're that program and you have a recruit on a visit, that's exactly the impression you want left. So it was really cool. But, yeah, the way the game played out was just really surprising. I'm watching UConn play at South Carolina now, and they're down 14 going into almost going into halftime. So, you know, this isn't, you know, maybe a vintage UConn team, but still, regardless. I mean, these are all elite recruits. And that's a tough place to go play. It was the campus was interesting. It kind of reminded me of Idaho.
Really?
With some of the hills. If you've ever been on Idaho's campus, just kind of hilly and not a bunch of huge buildings, kind of low set buildings. That for whatever reason, being on UConn's campus reminded me of being on Idaho's campus. So, but yeah, the arena itself was pretty cool, just with all the history in it.
I've got to get to one football question. Everybody got to, I guess, talk with the new coordinator, Joe Moorhead, last week. And, of course, we know fans will judge by their play, and they'll have a three and out against North Dakota State, and everybody will want Gary Croton back. But would it be accurate to say that I almost want to call targeting on Mario Cristobal, because it seems like Moorhead became available and the Duck head coach was like, I want it. I mean, this was a case of a guy that was really wanted.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and you got to do your due diligence. You know, you can't just say, you know, it's one guy or bust, and, you know, you can't limit yourself and risk finding, you know, another great candidate out there. But yeah, I mean, this guy's resume is pretty impressive. I mean, when the guys I work with are assembling his bio and things like that, it's like one thing after another you can list. And the other thing about him was I've never been in a situation in my 7 years working at Oregon so far where a hiring was like rumored or to be in the works. And I heard from more people who were like, hey, that dude's a great guy. You know, you're going to really looking forward to working with him. Like, he's just universally respected as a good dude by, you know, any media, coaches, whatever, anywhere he's ever gone. So I'm really looking forward to covering him and watching how the offense progresses. It's just going to be such a different year. I mean, obviously we saw some of the protections that were put in place to keep Justin Herbert healthy, and then the shackles came off a little bit the last couple games. So, you know, I don't think we have a true sense of what the Ducks might have done offensively under different circumstances last year, but now you've got a different coach. You've got that quarterback on. I think it's kind of a blank slate going into next year, just to see what this offense is going to look like.
Yeah, and now we could ponder this for a few more weeks before spring, and then I'll keep Duck fans cool during the summer. Folks, he is Rob Mosley, editor, chief, goducks.com. Again, on Twitter, you have options at Duck Football for many other things. Go Ducks Mosley. Rob, always a pleasure. Great stuff. And look forward to running into you at the arena real soon.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
All right. Take it easy, Rob. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Very quickly, talking about the world's largest indoor garage sale, March 28th at the Lane County Fairgrounds from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. If you're looking for some spring cleaning, it's a great opportunity. You need to grab your spot now. Booth space starts at $65 for a 10-by-10-foot spot. All you need to do is contact the KUJZ front desk. Reserve your space now. Admission's only $2. Don't miss it. The world's largest indoor garage sale, March 28th at the Lane County Fairgrounds, from KUJZ 95.3, The Score. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, and since it's a Monday and the first hour of Sports Talk is dwindling, we will light them up next. 95.3, The Score.
The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
Jim Crane, the owner, has said that when the team comes to spring training, there will be some sort of an apology. We don't know what that apology looks like. We don't know what that apology sounds like. We don't know the context. We really don't know a whole lot about it, other than the fact that Dallas Keuchel and Charlie Morton, ex-Astros, have apologized for it and really opened the door for the rest of the players who are here now to do the same.
Jeff Passan, they're going to issue some kind of an apology when spring training starts. Wow, can't wait. It's really going to resonate. Putzes. All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline as we welcome you back to Sports Talk. 'Cause tis that time on a Monday when we wrap hour one of the show, looking back at a huge weekend in sports, pick the standouts, a little something we call Light 'Em Up.
Again, Butter! Steph Curry, his 11th three of the night!
Kobe on a spin.
Yes!
What a display! They can't believe it courtside. Neither could we.
Airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree. Oh, my God.
How about another? To center field. Number four. Josh Hamilton.
It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
Thanks, Mike Tirico. Line them up. It's how we wrap up the first hour of Sports Talk, the best of the best from the weekend, the week, the month, whatever. We get to pick whoever. We get to pick it. We get to choose who lit it up. Steve, you go first.
Slightly.
Yeah.
No need to look farther than here. The Oregon women basketball team is lit!
It's lit! Shout out Javi! Scott! Because it's lit!
You know, you look at the last five games, three on the road, two here, one at one of the standard setters, UConn, where they only handed the Huskies their worst home loss of the Oriema era, that they won by a mere 18. Now seems like they were just toying, because that ended up to be the nail biter of the five. They took out the mountain schools in Boulder and SLC by a combined score of 191 to 116 this weekend against the Arizona schools, both ranked, by the way. They allowed a total of 100 points. They scored 164. In the first quarter yesterday, they held Arizona to a basket. 2 points, 15 at halftime. That was the team who had handed them their lone Pac-12 defeat this season. They scored enough points in the second half, Oregon did, to win the whole game. Jazz Shelley played 20 minutes, made all five shots. This team is clicking like a high-performance machine, and they are lit.
It's lit!
For me, the Derby de Milano was lit.
It's lit! Shout out Javi! Scott! Because it's lit!
The Derby de Milano is between Inter Milan and AC Milan, who play in Milan, Italy, and they're basically like the New York Giants and Jets because they share the same stadium. So last week I talked about Inter during What Are You Doing? Because their backup goalie got a red card after the game had ended in a game he did not play in because he hasn't played soccer in nearly 7 years. Today, it's because of an incredible comeback in a pretty underrated rivalry in international soccer. At the San Siro, AC Milan jumped out to a 2-0 lead with a pair of goals just before halftime. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he's still out there playing professional soccer at like 97, had an assist and a goal, and it looked all but over. Then Marcelo Brozovic scores in the 51st minute. Matthias Vecino scores in the 53rd. We got ourselves a tie game. Stefan de Verge scores to give Inter the lead 3-2, and Romelu Lukaku, my dude, comes back, puts the game to bed in the 94th minute. Inter coming all the way back from 0-2 down to win 4-2. Inter didn't even have a save. All two shots that AC Milan had went on net, and then nothing else after that. That's very incredible. I guess I'm an Inter fan now, and they're lit.
It's lit!
Next up, Gonzaga men's basketball and Fuego, a.k.a. Lit.
It's lit! Shout out Javi! Scott! Because it's lit!
You're not Gary.
Look, the West Coast Conference is... They've got just three teams ranked in the top 100 in the net. St. Mary's is pretty good. They were hosting the Zags with already 20 wins. They got torched This thing was a laugher at halftime as the Bulldogs rang up 53 points on their way to a 30-point road win. The Zags are probably going to run the table and cruise to the conference tournament title. Then, contingent on what happens with maybe Baylor and Kansas in the Big 12 or maybe San Diego State in the Mountain West, but they'll be one of the one seeds and maybe the top-ranked team in the country come madness time. They've got one loss to Michigan in the Bahamas Thanksgiving weekend. None since. They play at BYU a week from Saturday. Maybe, but I doubt it. Man, these Gonzaga Bulldogs are lit.
It's lit!
Was that the win that Michigan got that like took them from not ranked to fourth in the country?
Yeah, something like, because they ended up playing Oregon at their place at Chrysler.
Right.
So, yes.
It's very strange. Philandrus Fleming Jr. of your Fighting Buccaneers of Charleston Southern University was lit.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy! Scott! Because it's lit!
First off, this is the name of somebody who needs to go by the second rather than a junior, because Philandrus Fleming the second is a much better sounding name. Either way, Philandrus dominated, going 11-20 from the field, 3-7 from 3, 9-14 from the charity stripe, 3 blocks, and 15 rebounds. Fleming the second is just a 6-4 guard. He's averaging this year 9 rebounds a game, 4 more than his career average. My goodness. On Saturday, there were 4 more guys that had more than his 15 rebounds. Those guys were 6'8", 6'10", 6'5", and 6'9". Nice. But that's a lot of, you know, tall guys down low that you're trying to battle from. And the PF Flyer of Charleston Southern is now has them tied for third in the Big South, ready to make some noise in the tourney. Philandrus Fleming, lit.
It's lit!
And lastly, from the NBA, the Toronto Raptors' Pascal Siakam are lit.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy! Scott! Because it's lit!
Remember, they lost Kawhi Leonard. Anybody aware? They've won 14 in a row. Only the Bucks, who remain out front in the East, and the West-leading Lakers have more road wins. Pascal Siakam? Okay. 27th overall pick in the 2016 draft. Averaged 4 points a game as a rookie. Got a lot of DNPs. Then up to 7 points a game as a bench guy. Became a starter last year. Averaged 17 points, 7 rebounds. And now he's the most valuable player on that team. He's up to 23 points and 8 rebounds a game. Only 6 players in his draft have scored more points. And only Ben Simmons, who went first, has a higher win share. The Raptors and this Siakam fella are lit!
It's lit!
Yeah. These guys lost arguably the best player in the game, and they got better? Okay, I don't get it. But anyway, let's start thinking about the 5 o'clock hour. We call it Sports Talk, because it is next, 95.3 The Score.
I'm a fun guy.